Okay. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, Mr. Marvellous Martin White, and we're just having a big punch-up about GDPR, which is lovely.
Isn't it amazing, though, that, you know, we can still...
But Jackie's absolutely right. Yeah. So that's exactly what she said. There's still a lot of doubt about it. People still don't understand it. There's five of us in this studio, and we've all got a different take on it.
Yeah.
Martin's got done one of his things and gone and read some of the regulations and started quoting them to us. You know, so it's all been a bit of a laugh. But I'll tell you what, let's move on from that, and you can do something more interesting and tell us either a tweet or an email or something.
Okay, well, I'm going to stick with networking.
Okay, go for it.
I do a bit of networking myself. And just wanted to say a big congratulations to Brian Wakefield at Brian's BN on the Twitter. Brian's been running a very successful group in a pay-as-you-go networking group up in Dartford for the last couple of years that I go to. He launched one in Bromley, which is now being equally successful. And Julie, I know you go along as well.
Very good, yeah.
And last Friday, he launched one in Maidstone. So it was the kind of inaugural event in Maidstone last Friday, which went really well as well. So if you're someone that's looking for a new opportunity to network with about 50 businesses in the room every other week in one of those three locations, get in touch with Brian on the Twitter and book yourself into one of his meetings and hopefully get a fresh approach to going networking. But well done anyway. It was a great launch. And, we look forward to future meetings.
Cool. I've had a tweet from Debs again. Deb Smith, Carper Casio.
Hi, Debs.
She said, Vanilla Web, we'd love a shout-out, please. I'm organising a social media course for small businesses at Hats Coffee in Reculver on Thursday the 31st of January, 9 a.m. It's only £25. If you want to come along, email debs at carpocasio.co.uk.
Good. Nice spot, that, Reculver. Another good friend of ours, Jarman Solicitors, they've been on the show a couple of times in the last year. They've got together with the FSB and they've got their next, they do it fairly regularly now, actually. I think it's about, well, they did one just before Christmas, but they've got another one coming up on Friday the 15th of February at 5:30. So this is a networking after hours, actually in Jarman Solicitors' offices in Sittingbourne. So all are welcome. There's usually some nice nibbles and drinks available. There's plenty of parking available locally as well. So it's 5:30 to 7:30, and your host will be Jay Sahota from Jarman Solicitors, and that's Friday the 15th of February.
Fantastic. I've had a tweet from Natasha Sutton at Split Second Events, and she says, Vanilla Web Business Bunker, sending the community a GWS. I'm not sure what that is exactly. GWS, GWS, great, wonderful snog. Who knows? Anyway, she's sending us one. She said a lot of us got hit by the superbug and are feeling the pressure of going behind with tasks and stuff. It's okay to have time to reflect and review and communicate with those in collaboration on plans going forward. Look after your health, everybody. Thank you for that, Natasha. And I will find out what a GWS is at some point. We had a tweet from Telcare Limited, the telecom system suppliers over there in Rochester.
Hello, Lisa
and Dave and the team. Thank you very much.
Well, again.
Yeah, Eileen. And her wonderful book, Spanner in the Works. Do have a read of that if you ever get the chance. I don't want to miss any of these. So Active Business Group have been on, Jackie. A bit of fun from our chair. Jackie at JJ Systems on the bunker today. So thank you for that. Bruce Kidd has said, hope you have a fantastic show. And My Icky Guy. They're a vegan food company, and they say, please give the food junkies from My Icky Guy a shout out. We are so excited to have launched our raw cakes.
Ooh.
Lovely.
Nice.
Vegan or not, taste is king. Raw cakes. I have no idea what that is.
No. Well, you're not going to either.
Where's the samples?
Yeah,
we
yeah.
need Bruce to
Come
bring
on,
some
Bruce.
In.
Raw cakes. We want raw cake samples.
You're on another diet, so you're off the cakes.
Isn't it healthy then?
I don't know. I've no idea. They
I'm
might
sure
be.
They're low in calories.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it? It's got to be calorie free. It's vegan, isn't it? Yeah, there's nothing in it.
Well, I expect nuts qualify as sort of vegan friendly.
Don't you
don't
start
they?
On me. Oasis. Hi, Business Bunker. We'd love a shout out. We're organising our Making Tax Digital and Payroll seminar whilst listening to the show today. Mm. Our seminar will be on Thursday, the 28th of February at Cineworld, Ashford. So do find out about that. Yes. They have sent me a link, but it's been shortened by the lovely folks at Twitter. So do find out about it by following them on the Twitter, Oasis, O_A_SYS.
That's another thing I've got to get my head around.
What?
For quarter two. MTD.
Oh, make a tax deduction.
Yeah, I mean, it's, at the moment, I just file my VAT returns online through the HMRC Gov portal, but of course, all of that is disappearing. So
it's all changing.
I'll just add that to my list of things I need to get my head around. Windows 10.
Got to update your software.
MTD. All of that. But I was at one of Bruce's business seminars on Friday.
Yeah, London Golf Club.
The London Club.
It's nice there, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It was all focused around business productivity, and it was really quite an informative session, actually. And Linda did a fantastic kind of practical example where she kind of split us all into groups and to demonstrate the power and the value of a little bit of training in business. Mm. So when you show people how something can be done more efficiently, the knock-on benefit in terms of productivity and output. And it was really quite illuminating as we did that exercise. Mm. So they're always very interactive, their sessions, and I'm sure the Making Tax digital one will be equally as good in February as well. So looking forward to that, Bruce. Well,
fantastic.
Done.
Yep. There's a Tech Expo coming up this year. I'm giving you lots of notice for this. It's at the Clive Empson Suite at the Kent Event Centre in Detling, and it's happening on Thursday the 26th of September, so it's a long way off at the moment, but you need to start booking your exhibition stands and putting it in your diary because it's going to be a massive event. It's the first ever event of its kind in the southeast of England, a full-day exhibition for business owners wanting to connect with suppliers, services, and people who can help them run, build and grow their business with the power of technology. There'll be over 100 suppliers from different sectors of technology, including IT support, cybersecurity, software, digital marketing and online. You're going to hear from 5 fantastic speakers and take part in 4 interactive workshops. The speakers are Brian Sutton from Microsoft, Richard Bell of cybersecurity, Ben Abbott of Voice, Will Charlesworth of Digital Law, and Dale Carnegie will be there talking about being human in a digital world. Registration will open soon. Exhibition space is available, and don't miss this opportunity if you go to techexpouk.com. Techexpouk.com.
We might even see you there, Jackie.
It's already in my diary.
Oh, there you
but
go.
But I haven't booked a stand yet because I haven't seen the details.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they're just about to announce them.
So if
you go to the website, you can see it now, I think.
No, I'm sure I'll get an email, won't I?
I'm sure you will.
I'm not sure you will now.
Off of the events coming up.
No. They've panicked now. Now they've heard Martin say you can't email anyone, you won't get one.
Right. We'd better get another guest on.
We had. I was thinking that because we are going to run out of time. Would you like to introduce them?
I would. Who's coming on next? Okay, Julie, over to you.
Okay.
So the lovely Julie Firth from Diagrama and Diagrama Foundation, who I know has recently returned from Murcia in Spain.
Yep.
Making us all incredibly jealous with these these kind of pictures of beautiful blue skies and sunshine, but apparently it was a bit chilly.
It was a bit chilly, yeah. The forecast was for 21, but it dropped right down to about -6 at night. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
It's a good excuse to go to the shops and get some knitwear. So,
so tell us all about Diagrama and who you are, because you're obviously not just a UK-based organisation or charity, are you?
No, yeah, that's right. So Diagrama started in Spain about 30 years ago. They started working with young offenders initially, and that it's a not-for-profit organisation that's grown over the years, and we now run around 35 youth prisons in Spain, and we do it very, very well.
Okay.
The reoffending rate in our centres is around 20% compared to about 70% in the UK.
Wow. That's impressive, isn't it?
And I think the reason for that is our emphasis is very much on rehabilitation rather than punishment.
Yeah.
And the culture in Spain it sort of supports that as well, the social care support that's out there. But Diagrama in Spain also has a host of other services around that support vulnerable people. They run some of some of the probation services are outsourced to them. They run lots of drug prevention programs, family counselling.
So they're a huge organisation.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest charities in the country. Mm. And they came to the UK about 10 years ago. It's actually our 10th anniversary in March this year.
Right.
We also have operations in Germany and Senegal and with various projects in France, and I think we've done projects in Poland as well. So we're right. sort of all over the place. Mm-hmm. But we spent about 5 years in the UK first, sort of finding out, learning the system, because it was our CEO, David Maguire, who came over from Spain, so he needed to kind of get his head around how things were run.
And what, through the local authorities?
Yeah, how the services were commissioned, the regulations around that, because it's a very different system.
And culture. I mean, you made a really interesting point about culture. So, you know, clearly in Spain, you know, there is a greater awareness, perhaps, of the need to look after younger people that perhaps have kind of, you know, fallen off the road a little bit.
Yeah, I think generally they have very strong family values right. in Spain as a culture, but they look after their young, they look after their old incredibly well. But they also have their social care staff it's a privilege to be in that role, whereas in the UK it tends to be minimum wage workers in those roles, whereas certainly in Diagrama the emphasis is on having people who tend to be very well educated, degree level and above. They're on good salaries, therefore the services that they provide, they're working with the most vulnerable people in our society, therefore we need the best staff to do that.
That's a good model to follow then. Mm. Is that a budget thing? Does Spain just spend more money? And what is it? I mean, obviously culture is important.
I was going to say, I think Julie hit the nail on the head when she talked about culture, really. You know, it's like anything. I mean, even in more general things like the hospitality industry, Spain, France and other countries, they value hospitality industry at a far higher level than we do here. We see those kind of jobs as minuscule non-productive jobs, but they're not. You know, it's about humanness, isn't it? It's about interacting with humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in our culture, we don't value that for some reason. I've no idea why.
I think the going back to what you were asking, Martin, about the cost element of it. Certainly in the custodial centres in Spain, the ratio of staff to the young people is lower because they're skilled, so they have the ability to manage higher groups of young people than perhaps more unskilled staff in the UK. So. But I was very lucky to go over there last week. We were filming some of the other centres there. So they have elderly care centres and day centres for adults with learning disabilities, as well as the custodial centres as well. So
in the UK then, I mean, how many centres do you run now in the UK?
So we have several different services in the UK. We have an adoption agency. Right. A fostering agency. We're a registered charity in the UK, so it's all not for profit. We also have three homes for adults with learning disabilities in Orpington. We have a home for young people for a semi-independent living service, so that might be care leavers that don't have any family to support them through college or to get into work. Or generally give them life skills so that they can go on to be independent. And we also have a 50-bed care home over in sunny Clacton.
Wow.
Okay.
And one of the things I know you were very keen to talk about today was business engagement and the value to businesses of engaging with organisations like yourself in terms of the value to them and inside their business. So tell us a little bit about that and what you're all about on that level.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the last charity that I worked for was a children's cancer charity. And it was very easy to gain support from the public and from families that were connected to that. And one thing I found when I took on this role was that because of the people we support don't have a lot of natural organic support around them, it's a bit of a struggle to win community support. So that got me into the networking circuit, trying to meet people to tell them about what we do. And since then, it's kind of crystallised in my mind, certainly from a marketing perspective, that there's a lot of businesses out there that aren't recognised, small ones as well, that aren't recognising the benefits of working with charities. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of businesses that do work with charities or do support charities, but could be doing much more that would be of benefit to their business as well.
What are some of the benefits to businesses then of engaging with somebody like you?
I think one of the biggest ones would probably be to raise your profile. When you're working with charities, if you're open about it, then and you use that as a platform to say something about your business, then you're kind of setting out your stall as these are my values. Yeah. This is what we're about.
Corporate social responsibility.
Exactly that.
We support
exactly
young
that.
People. Yeah. We encourage young people into our business.
And your customers will see your customers will see that, and they'll see that as a reflection of why they should work with you as well, why they should choose you against somebody else. And so that would be one of the main benefits. And I think when you I think it's really important to, if you're looking for a charity to work with, to think about it strategically. Try and find a charity that's going to really align with your business and not only your personal values, but how your business can fit in with that charity. So if you're an IT company, IT support company, I know someone that works very closely with Demelza, and they use that relationship. It goes both ways. So every time he's out there supporting them, he's shouting out about Demelza. He's telling them how wonderful they are. All of Demelza's supporters will see that he's doing that as well. So it is good exposure for him. And I know some people feel like it shouldn't always be a two-way relationship in that sense. But the longer that relationship can continue, the better it is for both parties. So don't be shy about shouting out about the work that you do with charities, because we all appreciate it.
It's another one of those strange views that we have here. Funnily enough, I haven't read the report. I only saw it through Twitter this morning. But somebody was writing a report for one of the better magazines or papers, and it was about the difference in charitable giving between the United States and the UK and the term philanthropy. And they were trying to make it a negative that the US spends a lot of time and money on charities. And they were trying to say, yeah, but, you know, they get all this promotion. So what? Yeah. Whereas the Americans give more money to charity than the rest of the world combined. And when you look at things like the Bill Gates Foundation or what have you, they've given billions of dollars to charity. And then somebody's whining that, oh, he gets recognised for it. So what?
And I think that's right. If you can make it work for you, then you're going to hang in there and you're going to do it for longer.
And do it more. And I think so many organisations, on a smaller level as well, do things like that to be part of the community. You know, it is just playing your part in a community. If you're supporting more local charities or whatever.
But what I like about what you're saying as well is, you know, you don't knock on people's doors and ask them for money.
No.
No, they send them emails, mate.
Because, you know, they send what, sorry?
Send them emails.
Well, I'm sure you don't do that because you'd be in contravention of GDPR. But the charity sector, as you know better than me, is incredibly saturated. Mm. And you only need to turn on a bit of daytime TV to see, you know, all the, you know, there's a lot of competition for our pounds in our pockets.
Yeah, and I think businesses need to be perhaps a little bit more creative thinking about the ways that they can help.
Yeah. But what you're saying is, you know, for me, that makes perfect sense. Look, you know, put us at the centre of everything you're all about as an organisation, your values, in other words.
That's right, yeah.
And then we'll work with you on a kind of strategic basis from there, as opposed to, you know, run an ad hoc fundraising event and give us 250 quid on the back of it.
That's exactly it, because so many times I get asked, well, what can we do to help? I'm like, well, how long have you got? Because I could probably find 20 ways you could help, but it depends what's going to work for you as well. Yeah. It has to, it's a two-way street, so... there's, you know, some of the obvious other ways are going to be with volunteering. Volunteering is a fantastic way to build your team morale together. Mm-hmm. I think there's lots of evidence around there that shows that volunteering decreases staff sickness levels, improves attrition rates. So there's the volunteering aspect.
Well, it's the feel-good factor, you know. Absolutely, it's quite motivating, isn't it?
That's right, And, you know, why waste money on a team-building exercise somewhere else when you can use it for the greater good?
And get a double effect,
I mean, we need to be, you know, obviously in order to kind of approach it on this level, we need to be talking to businesses that have got a certain critical mass or do we? I mean, you know, from your point of view, you know, how does it work best, or where does it work best?
I think you can work, charities can work with businesses of all shapes and sizes. Even to give you an idea, so we also have a first aid training service. Mm-hmm. That side of our business is fully regulated first aid training service, but the profits from that will go directly to helping our charitable work that we do. And we've recently provided training for our one-man band, videographer, mm-hmm. and some volunteers from other charities, mm-hmm. from big-scale businesses. So by coming to us for your first aid training right. service, then you're saying something that you're supporting charity yeah. by putting your services yeah. that way rather than going commercial.
I like that, because the point again there for me is it's value add.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, right. yeah.
You've got to train people in your business to be aware of first aid.
Mm.
But actually, if you link with us and do it through us,
yeah.
you know, there's a double kind whammy. Of a win-win, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And nice. I think there's also lots of charities out there that will work with vulnerable groups of people and have things like catering businesses. So when you're going to book an event, have a look. If you're serious about sending out that corporate social responsibility message, then look at all the different ways that can tie into all of your activities.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And you're right, you don't have to be a big business.
Oh, no, you don't. Because as Julie said, there are lots of different ways you can help. It isn't just money. Mm. It can be time, it can be volunteering. You know, I know businesses that give their staff volunteering time, you know, so you get time off from work and go volunteer somewhere.
But the point is, if you embed it in your business, yeah. it can be quite powerful, can't
yeah,
it?
So, yeah, can.
Yeah, definitely. Brilliant.
And there are some tax benefits as well around that. I'm not an accountant, so I'm going to refrain from trying to explain what they are. But yeah. I know things, if you make a donation of equipment, so if you're changing your office furniture or something right. like that, yeah. donate your old office furniture to a charity and you can offset the cost of that capital expenditure. Yeah. So it's worth looking into.
Another way to get involved.
Funnily enough, we have a blog about that, which explains the ins and outs of charitable giving from a tax point of view. If you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/charity, you can read all about that.
And you're also going to write us a blog, aren't you, in the very near future about ways in which businesses can work with
I'll
you on
do
that,
that
level.
Especially
so,
for you.
Yeah, thank you. Now, I think it's really interesting. And again, it's just something that's just not on people's radar. Mm. You know, it's not talked about enough because there aren't enough people like you going out there engaging with the business community. So that's why it's so good to have you on today, because it makes perfect sense. Again, it's another thing that just makes absolute sense for businesses.
Yeah. Julie, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to find out more about Diagrama, how can they do that? What's the best way of finding out?
We're on Twitter at Diagrama UK, and our website is www.diagramafoundation.org.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Stay
with us for the rest of the show, but for the moment, Julie, thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks.
I think we can do a quick couple of...
Yes.
Catch-up emails, and then we're going to talk to Laura.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Got a very quick one then. Mm. Venues and Events Expo, South East, at the Kent Events Centre, Thursday the 9th of May, 9 till 5. Now, I was fortunate enough to go along to this last year, and what this is really, it's a one-day event for event professionals, venues, PAs, VAs, everybody basically involved in terms of finding a corporate venue for their business, basically. And the great thing about it last year was there was pretty much everybody that you would want to meet in the context of, you know, a potential venue for my business in one place on the same day. Mm. And they weren't all kind of, you know, clawing at each other, saying, you know, come and talk to me instead of them and what have you. What really surprised me about that event was how inclusive everybody is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And it's a very kind of collaborative environment.
Mm. Mm.
And actually everybody just wants to work together for the greater benefit of all. Mm. So it's a very nice, relaxed event, I would suggest, in that context. So if you are involved in procurement of anything along those lines in terms of event management, then get yourselves along to that. It's Thursday the 9th of May. 9 till 5, and it has its own website, venueseventsexpo.co.uk. So look forward to seeing you there.
Fantastic. Cool. I've got an event tomorrow, Manana.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. It's taking place at the Ashford Business Point, which is part of the Chamber of Commerce offices, from 9:45 till 12, and it's a reverse employment fair. What we have 20 young people with various supported and disabled needs that are going to present themselves to employers. So instead of employers having a table there and telling people what they want, these young people are going to say what their talents and skills are and let employers choose who they want to work for them. It's going to be interesting. It's the first time we've done it. We're trying to see how it will work, but we're quite bullish and it's going to be a lot of fun. So do come along. It's free to attend. 9:45 tomorrow, 23rd of January, at the Ashford Business Point, Waterbrook Avenue, Sevington. It's in association with Kent County Council, Kent Supported Employment Group and the education people. Do come along.
You might want to poke your head around the door of that one, Julie, if you've got some time tomorrow.
Definitely, yeah.
Good.
Fantastic. If you follow them on Twitter, if you follow KSE on Twitter, some of the CVs of the supported needs people are already on there so that you can have a look and see what you're getting.
Good. Shall we talk to Laura?
I think we ought to.
I think we should.
Yeah.
And if we've got time at the end, we'll do a few more events and what have you. So, Laura.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Brookhurst Risk Solutions.
So tell us a little bit about what you do and what you specialise in, because it's quite specific, isn't it, in many ways?
Yes. So I started my business about 5 years ago. I'm part of GSI Commercial, who are based in Stroud in Rochester. The directors of GSI are directors of my business, and we sort of work together. So anything that comes in that is deemed as rural commercial business, equestrian, which is obviously the main niche of my business, and
we're talking about insurance here.
We are, okay. Yes, yeah. So it's all insurance.
But with an equestrian,
yeah. I mean, basically, I started working in insurance at AXA Insurance as a commercial underwriter, and then I went out on the road servicing brokers, talking to them about AXA's products, and joined another company, which we started alongside my husband, called Evolution Underwriting, where I was the sales and marketing director there. And basically, we decided we were going to have a child, which we did. And I thought, well, I need to do something else because I can't maintain that job. So I thought I'd start Brookhurst Risk Solutions. And I approached David and Terry at GSI and asked them if they would help me, because starting a new business in insurance is really difficult with the regulation and everything else. And so there it started in November 2013.
And the equestrian angle wasn't purely by chance, was it? Because I know you're a keen rider yourself.
That's right. So I've had horses all my life. My parents are riding instructors, breeders. My dad was a blacksmith. So we come from a very, what I call, horsey background.
Yes.
And I was a keen show jumper at an amateur level. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, still carry on doing that. My daughter, who's 8, is mad on that as well.
Because you were up in Liverpool just before Christmas, I know, competing, weren't you?
Yes, I was at Aintree Racecourse. They've got an equestrian centre there, and they were running the amateur finals, which was a week away, which was hard juggling trying to manage work, because when you obviously got a business and you have to run it, customers don't wait. So my horse box is equipped with Wi-Fi and a laptop. And
you've got an office in your horse box.
You've got one of those posh ones, haven't you? With a bedroom and a shower and everything else.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say it's necessarily posh, but it does its job, I have to say.
But what I like about that is it gives you, I guess, a unique insight into the needs of people in that marketplace.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, because I love businesses like yours. It's a very highly focused niche. Yeah, you know what your market is, and the beautiful thing for you is that you're involved in that marketplace as a participant yourself as well, which just, you know, kind of squares it all up nicely. But just talking about the business of insurance broking, which is what you're in, what are the kinds of cover that you're writing for people? So when you're talking about insurance, you know, what aspects do you cover as far as horses are concerned, you know?
Well, as I say,
spare wheels and, well, whatever. No, they don't have wheels on horses, do they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I offer quite diverse in the equestrian markets, because I can be doing a lady that owns a horse and will only just ride out on the roads, what they call a happy hacker, and keeps it at a livery yard, to elite sport horses.
But what kind of insurance are you selling her? Accident insurance, damage to the horse, damage to her?
Yeah, it's insuring the horse. So you normally buy a package. So it will cover, again, depending on what the type of horse is and what they're used for, you'll buy vets' fees,
right?
Because obviously they're prone to having accidents, don't we all know? obviously the loss of the horse. So how much the horse is worth. So if the horse dies, unfortunately, you can get the money back for that.
I was thinking if it got stolen. Right, okay.
Yeah, or stolen.
Yeah, or
strayed. Race
horses must be insured for millions, I would imagine.
I have to quickly tell you this. Years ago, I got up one Sunday morning, and there was a horse in my front garden, okay? Oh. It had no bridle on it, it had no saddle. So, because I'm thinking, first of all, it's thrown a rider and just run off and was eating the apples on my tree is what it was doing. And the horse was there. So I go out on the road and look for someone. I lived miles out in the country then, and there was no one else about. So eventually I phoned the RSPCA and I said, I got a horse in my garden. And they went, yeah, whatever. And I went, no, but it's not mine. And they went, yeah, whatever. And I said, well, what do I do? And they went, well, if you get some flyers made up and put them around locally and see if you can find the owner. And I went, and what do I do with it in the in-between time? And they went, well, it's not our problem. So I called the police and they went, no, call the RSPCA. And I just did that as a waste of time. So I thought, you know what, I'll wind them up. So I called the RSPCA back and I said, I've still got this horse. And they went, well, you know, until you find the owner, there's nothing you can do. I said, oh, don't worry, I'll eat it. And they went, you can't do that. That's an offence. We'll come and get it. Went, thank you.
It is interesting, actually, because horses stray. I think that it's they say you're supposed to leave them with a sign on the gate for 24 hours.
Yeah. But
like you, if they're in your garden, other than giving you a little bit of extra nourishment for your roses, you don't really want them there, do you?
No, exactly. So,
does it cover rider as well? Because if, you know, I mean, do you have personal insurance wrapped up with your horse? Because if you fall off a horse, it's obviously...
That's right. I mean, you can buy, people buy what levels of cover they want.
Right.
So fundamentally, they'll come to us to insure their horse. And within that horse package, they will obviously cover the loss of the horse. They'll also cover an element called loss of use. So it's if the horse injures itself, which therefore is unable to maintain the function which they purchased the horse for, i.e. competitive riding or even just riding in general, they'll pay out a sum of money to the policyholder. Mm-hmm. It'll cover vet's fees, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. which will cover...
It's obviously a big thing as well, right?
That's the main element which people buy for, to be mm-hmm. fair. Personal accident to the rider. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not a full personal accident policy, so it won't cover sickness or anything like that, but it does give you... some cover if you happen to suffer a loss of limb or damaged teeth or...
Get kicked or fall off and...
Yeah, well, it's not so much... It's quite limited, really.
Right.
It's more in a disaster, to be fair, in that you, unfortunately, do suffer quite serious injuries.
Yeah.
And there's,
vehicle? Horse box?
Yeah, I mean, a horse policy will cover a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a motorised horse box, then you could buy separate insurance for that, which is something that I do.
Right.
And under the horse insurance, there's a legal fees element, again, against any repercussions they may have. Say, for instance, a horse straying or they've been involved in a road traffic accident and the public liability to cover the third parties. If you're riding down the road, your horse may damage your
third party. I guess for most people, you have a policy that covers most, you know, 99% of the things that you're going to need. And if you need to bolt on something else, then you can always kind of do that because you've got a bespoke this or whatever it is.
That's right, yeah. So you choose, but mainly it's normally the loss of horse and vet's fees and the public liability that people buy.
Have you ever been sort of responsible for creating an insurance product that didn't previously exist? Because with your own experience, have you ever come across a scenario where, you know, you thought, oh, crikey, you know, I wouldn't actually be covered in that eventuality and therefore we need to add that as part of the policy?
Well, I'm actually meeting up with an insurer tomorrow and we are looking at introducing a new horse policy to try and change the way that insurance is transacted. So you have to watch this space on that one.
Exciting, Because that's the other advantage, isn't it? When you're living and breathing it, you know, you're going to think of ideas. You think, oh, you know, actually there's a market for that. You know, people need that.
Well, having been on the insurer, so I've worked for an insurance company. Mm. So for insurance companies, it's always about, you know, whether the trade or the risk that they're looking at can make money for their shareholders.
Mm.
And obviously, it's not, unless it's a mutual company, they're not passed down. So it is obviously shareholders that are obviously interested in that. So as a broker, that same element doesn't necessarily apply to me because I am the middleman. Mm. But at the same time, horse insurance is basically what we call a loss leader because of the vet's fees. So there's a lot of losses that come through that. which makes then insurance very difficult because there's a minimum, there's a quite a restricted market. So there's not many insurers that want to insure horses or equine. And also, if they do, they put on lots of exclusions if there's previous health problems, or they'll increase premiums if there's been a claim to quite dramatic effect in some instances. So it is difficult. So what I'm trying to do is try and look at a way which we can influence the policyholder, if you like, and the insurer to try and make a bit of a happier place for everybody.
That's great, isn't it? But you also do commercial buildings as well, because obviously there's riding schools, there's, you know, I don't know, the kind of, for want of a better word, the sand pits where people go to kind of train. And
livery yards.
And so you do
menage is the word you're looking for.
Menage, right?
So I do the whole shebang.
Kylie Menage, that is, yeah.
you're thinking of something else. Yeah. Don't go there.
So I do everything. I mean, my background is actually commercial insurance. So insuring commercial property, whether it be on an equestrian farming background, or you see a lot of diversification where you're seeing businesses setting up in what they call, like, you know, agricultural buildings. That's sort of my forte, really. I know about it. That's how I started off. And again, with my sort of connections, I find that, you know, much more interesting than...
We often talk about sort of knowing your market, don't we, in business?
It's the beauty. I absolutely adore what Laura's doing. I love niche markets. Yeah. I absolutely love them. If you get the right niche market, it's fantastic because you can put so much into it. Mm. Yeah. In a more general place market, especially in insurance and underwriting, you know, you're just left with a bunch of underwriters that kind of go, £1,000.
Exactly. Price is always important, but price is a reflection of value, isn't it? And ultimately, you know, people invest a lot of time as well as money and themselves into their animals. And you want the best that you can get for them, don't you, at the end of the day? So it's not necessarily about how much it's costing.
And the other thing I love about Laura's business is that not is only a niche, but it's actually a fairly substantial niche. Mm. Do you have any numbers? Do you know how many people own, how many horses there are in the UK, or how many people own horses? I mean, I guess it's thousands and thousands,
there's a lot, isn't there? I mean, off the top of my head, there's about 2,000 riding schools.
Yeah.
So obviously, riding schools is an area which I look to insure. Having been that's my background, where I grew up in a riding school.
Mm.
But it's not just that; it's competition centres, livery yards.
Yeah.
So there is a big area.
It's a big market.
Very big. Yeah.
Can I ask you potentially a slightly contentious question? What's your kind of view on people, you know, riding on country lanes, and, you know, when they're moving from a farm to a field, or, you know, whatever it is? What's your view on that? Because it always worries me whenever I'm driving on rural roads in Kent, you know, that I'm going to come across somebody on a horse.
So you drive very slowly and considerately.
So I do.
Not everybody does.
But what's your kind of view on that whole kind of potential problem?
So, when I was 9 years old, which was a long time ago now, my parents said, you can ride out on the road. And I lived in Chilham, Old Rise Lees, and it was perfectly safe. My daughter is 8. Would I let her go on the road in next year? No way. I mean, I actually buy for my family a toll band, which means that I can ride on farmers' lands and around the local woods. I do take my horses on the roads. It is a very dangerous place. And, you know, you can argue people, some horse owners will say, well, horses were here first, you know, but you can meet cyclists who'll just cycle past horses and scare them. You know, I think it's a difficult one because it is dangerous. There's more people on the road these days. As we've talked about, you know, look at Ashford, it is doubling in size. You know, there's more homes being built. So, you know, it's difficult. People are always in a rush.
It's not always people being unreasonable either, is it? I mean, with a country lane, you don't know what's around the bend, you know. And a lot of our country lanes have 60-mile-an-hour speed limits on them, for some bizarre reason. And you go barreling around a corner and there's two people on horses. Exactly. It's normally when they've doubled up that it's worse because you can't do anything.
But do you know the BHS tell them to actually double up?
Yeah, no, I know that.
And
it is
dangerous as well, so it's difficult to do.
You know, because it blocks the entire carriageway. But, I mean, funnily enough, I followed two horses yesterday and everybody was really good. Everybody slowed down and wasn't impatient to overtake them or whatever, and let them ride to a space where they could pull over and let traffic through.
But you're right.
But you don't always see that.
You come across them at the wrong point on the road, you know.
Yeah.
So, I guess, you know, common sense, but, you know, your personal you err towards, you know, not taking your horses on the road unless you have to, I guess.
I mean, I can't say I don't, because I do take them on the road, but it's dangerous. It's difficult. Yeah. It's difficult to know what the right answer is, to be fair.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. Does that affect... is that something I have to declare in my insurance policy when I'm taking it out, that I will be taking my horse on the road?
No, but the majority of insurers now will say that you have to wear high vis. Right. And I think if you weren't wearing a high vis jacket... Mm-hmm.
Do they actually say that in the policy?
Some of the policy owners do, yeah.
You got a riot in Paris?
What? Sorry, we're a bit slow there today.
Because, Jackie, you're a rider as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I do ride, yes.
So do you, how do you, I'm assuming Laura sorts your insurance requirements.
I currently don't own
you.
My own horse, and I have a rider policy with another company, competitor of Laura's from years ago. So I am insured as a rider on other people's horses. But that's why I'm interested about the policy comments. I mean, Laura's advice in terms of what a policy, I have actually sought her advice on policies and ones I intend to take out. So it's interesting to hear what she says. You can't get that if you ring up some of the large commercial industry.
That was my question. So you always go to a specialist.
Yeah, they don't give you very specific advice. Yeah. It's just a general policy. Whereas if you speak to Laura, she'll take the time to go through the policy and explain the little niches.
Well, you wouldn't ask a meerkat, in other words, about your equine insurance needs. That wouldn't be the thing to do.
No.
And it's funny because we're starting to come back to that as well. And it's funny that you should raise that. With so many people have been burnt by using insurance comparison websites and just finding the cheapest insurance they can find on anything, and then when push comes to shove, it doesn't work because their policy's just not right. It's not right for them.
Well, I think the biggest problem is being, and we're sort of diverting from talking about the question, but on that side of things, is that they aren't always UK insurers.
Yeah.
So they'll be based somewhere else, and therefore, you know, they may not have to comply with some of our regulations that we have. So, and that can be
You are
issue.
Heavily regulated, aren't you?
Yes.
As an industry.
Yeah, we are. And hence the reason why to start up a business, when I decided to start up Brookhurst Risk Solutions, for me to become regulated, I need to have a lot of money in what's called a client account. And I couldn't do it. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't have been able to have started up my business.
But what you're saying is potentially I could be buying an insurance product from an overseas firm who hasn't got the regulatory controls that a UK-based firm would have.
Yeah.
And therefore...
You don't know what you're getting.
How do
that
people
is worrying,
know?
Isn't it? I didn't know that happened.
How do people safeguard themselves from that? What questions should they be asking?
Well, when you look on the documentation or the quotation, it should say where they are based. It will
where
say
they're
whether they're regulated by the FCA and it'll give a number. So all of my documentation has to have that we are regulated by the FCA.
I didn't even know that. That is such a fundamental point as well, isn't it, for any insurance, I guess, isn't it?
Because obviously you also want to really try and aim to go for companies. All the companies that I deal with will be A-rated. We do not deal with any companies that aren't A-rated, just purely because there has been some instances where we've seen insurers go bust, and that's left the policyholder in difficulties.
That's an industry self-regulating thing, is it? The A standard.
That's right, I mean, obviously, if you're a personal client, you are picked up underneath a fund, but commercial clients do struggle.
A lot of businesses I see, because I had a car accident a couple of years ago, and I noticed that the person that I had the accident with, their firm were actually based in Gibraltar.
That's right.
Is that for tax reasons? But it's not necessarily a good thing, is it, for the consumer?
No.
That I thought was really interesting.
It's one of the main reasons why people are starting to come back to using brokers, because you get a personal service from a broker that will tailor a product to suit your needs. And yes, it might be slightly more expensive, but what's the point in having cheap insurance if it doesn't actually provide the cover that you want? Yeah,
I'm going to go out and buy a horse just so that I can talk to Laura.
You don't need to just buy a horse. I do all commercial insurances as well. A question is just one of my niche.
No, but he's peckish at the moment. That's why he wants a horse.
Could do with an apple.
He's going to fight a horse.
In your pocket, Laura.
He's going to fight the horse for its nuts.
All these nuts that keep being talked about today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the vegan thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Nuts. That was, you know, that was so informative.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, love gosh, it. Why would anybody talk to anybody else?
Yeah.
Would exactly. be my question.
So, Laura, if people want to talk to you about either equine insurance or commercial insurance, how can I get hold of you? What's the best way to find out more about you?
I'm on Twitter. It's at Brookhurst Risk. I have a Facebook page at which is obviously Brookhurst Risk, and my website is www.brookhurstrisk.com. I'm also on Instagram, just started it, so right. we shall see how that goes, and that's at Brookhurst Risk too.
And fantastic. You live in a lovely part of the world as well, around Pluckley, don't you?
I'm in Smarden, yes. Not so. In the haunted village yet, but we're on the sort of the same road.
So if you're driving around the country lanes around, in and around Smarden, then do take your foot off the gas and just be considerate for horse riders.
It was a bit crowded around Smarden the other night because the main 262 at Headcorn was closed due to a road traffic accident and all the traffic was flying around Smarden, so it could have been a bit of a laugh around there in the last few days.
Mm.
Yeah, cool, Laura. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you very
tonight.
Much for having me on.
It's an absolute brilliant. Pleasure thank and very informative and very interesting.
Very.
Talk yeah. about the world of insurance, especially yeah. in equine
and niche markets and yeah. knowing your market.
Absolutely. Mm. We've only got a couple of minutes left until the end of the show. So if you've got any urgent emails or tweets that you need to read, do so now.
Nothing urgent. I'm just scrolling through the hashtag BBunker Twitter handle. We've had lots of interaction, actually, from people. I know Denise has tuned in today. Thanks, Denise, because I know you're incredibly busy with your new acting career. But, yeah, she's obviously been tuned in and listening, so thanks for that.
I've got a couple of quick events that I want to mention. Soti Coca said, I host a Kent digital meeting in Folkestone. It's a digital marketing meetup that happens on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the workshop in Folkestone. I think that's in Tontine Street, isn't it? And the next one's Manana tomorrow, 23rd of January. So get along the workshop, Folkestone, for Soti's digital meetup. Talking of meetups, there's a tweet up. It's a free networking event for people that follow each other on Twitter. And it's taking place, Whitstable tweet up, Canterbury tweet up, and it's taking place at Lenley's in the Terrazzo restaurant, and that's in Roper Road, Canterbury. And it's on Thursday, the 31st of January, 10 a.m., and there's free parking on site.
I'll tell you another niche business that must be booming at the moment, plumbing.
Plumbing.
I had a whole new bathroom stuff delivered over a week ago. Can I find a plumber to install it before the end of March? No. So if there are any plumbers out there in and around the Thanet area, I'm going to do a bit of a Chris Evans. Can you get in touch with me, please? Because I need a plumber to install my new bathroom, which is currently taking up one of my spare bedrooms.
Right, okay. Good.
At Supply My Biz will do, or at Martin Paul White on the Twitter. Just get in touch with me, please.
But don't email.
Yeah, don't email because he won't answer them. He'll report if you email him. He'll report you. Yeah, that's why you can't find a plumber, mate. Yeah.
So
yeah.
cruel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here on the Business Punk Show, we're pleased to partner with My Careers Options, and My Careers Options is a platform helping parents to help their children explore the right career options for them. It's a really interesting platform. Do check it out. There's a 50% discount if you use the code BBunker50. And if you go to mycareersoptions.co.uk, you can find out all about it. But it's a fantastic resource. Do check it out. Just to remind you that this Friday, our sister show, the Business Bunker Extra Show, is on at 11 a.m. With the lovely Amanda Flanders. And her co-host this week is cybersecurity specialist Richard Bell. And their guest is the absolutely wonderful Tracy Ferguson.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so that's the Business Bunker Extra Show this Friday, 11 o'clock, here on channelradio.co.uk/2.
Good.
But basically, that brings us to the end of another Business Bunker show for this week.
Oof.
Whew, that was great.
Action-packed again.
It was.
Brilliant.
Loads
guests.
Of interesting
thank you
stuff.
So
yeah.
much, you guys. You were amazing.
I want to say a big thank you to our three guests. Mm-hmm. We heard from the lovely Jackie Offen about the work she's doing with Alzheimer's and dementia, and also about the fantastic stuff she does with JJ Systems in supporting your IT needs. And we learned about her video wall and all the things that she does.
So Windows 7.
Absolutely. Upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10.
GDPR.
Everything around it. Yeah.
So, everything.
Good stuff. So thank you to Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful thank you to Julie Firth of Diagrama, talking about a charity that's helping young people come back into society, I suppose is the best way of putting it, and also the work they're doing here in the UK with lots of things like fostering and getting people adopted, as well as their commercial arm offering first aid training.
Yeah, and business engagement, yeah. You know, and putting charities at the centre of your kind of strategy as a business, which I think was very interesting.
Absolutely. And then, of course, last but not least, we heard from Laura Upton about insurance in the equine world and the commercial world. So thank you all very much, and thank you to Martin for co-hosting the show. That's it for another week. We'll be back next week with another Business Bunker show. In the meantime, have a fantastic time. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.